fundamentally an American.
Good evening. Broadcasting from the Gulag city of Planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Our technical producer is Steve Nolan, and our guest for this evening was to have been Congressman Ron Paul, but he's currently in debate on the Rohrabacher bill. Now, this is a bill that could take away the funding for the DEA to raid medical marijuana patients in the basically nine western states that have medical marijuana provisions. There's a slim chance he's going to join us, but I doubt a congressional debate will be less than half an hour, and I just talked to his assistant. So I'm going to wing it. I want to invite you to go ahead and call in. If you have questions on the drug war, about the laws in Texas, about what's going on in this city in this regard, I welcome your calls. And our number here, 713-526-5738. Now, one of the questions I had for the congressman, and I just kind of want to outline my theory on it and give you my answer at the same time, and that is this drug war is dead. It's been dead for about 30 years. And what we have is a bunch of, I call them U.S. Republican guards, and they're hanging around this corpse trying to keep us from seeing the fact that their Goliath is dead. And the whole point being, they have no defense anymore. They have bluster. They can still arrest you and shoot you, kill you. But they have no facts. They have no information with which to fight a battle about this drug war. And I'd like to talk about that. If you get the chance, give me a call. Here's a quick story. It comes out in New York. It's about the Rockefeller drug laws. And everyone up there agrees there needs to be a change. They all desperately are trying. They're bringing in entertainers to help, I guess, liven up the proceedings. But they can't seem to come to an agreement, and they have not yet made any change whatsoever. Let me read a bit of it here. Pataki said if his proposal becomes law, hundreds of nonviolent offenders would be released from prison, and thousands of others would have their sentences reduced. Now, to try to soften opposition from prosecutors and other, you know, drug warriors, the proposal would also toughen penalties for so-called drug kingpins, for dealers who use guns or sell drugs to children or by using the internet. Quote, we cannot afford to lose this historic opportunity to pass a bill that would make an immediate difference to so many lives, as well as to protect our neighborhoods and children from drugs and violence. And that was George Pataki. Now, there's another proposal that's coming from the legislative leaders, and their proposal would dramatically reduce penalties for all nonviolent drug offenders. It would make eligible all nonviolent felons for a significant reduction in prison time, and it would make virtually all nonviolent drug felons eligible for retroactive relief. I guess that means reduction in sentence. Now, the thing is, all of these ideas are much better than what they have, because they're almost as bad as Texas in the number of people that they, incarcerate. But again, I talked to the people in the Texas Congress, and I'm sure it's nationwide. Our guest last week, Barney Frank, said as much, that these guys think more like us than we might imagine. And the fact is, they need to hear from you. They need to hear from their constituents. They need to know that it's okay to change their status, and that working against the drug laws does not make them soft on crime. All right, looks like we're getting some calls coming in. I appreciate that. Steve, can we go ahead and pick up what one's working
in the
there?
East.
Okay, Steve. All right, we got one on line one. Hello, line one.
Oh, yes. Am I speaking?
Yes, hello. Do you have a question?
My name is Frank Gill, and I had the pleasure of speaking to you last night.
Oh, yes, Frank. Hello.
I'm sorry to hear that Representative Ron Paul couldn't make it to your show, because I was going to thank him for supporting House Resolutions 2233 and House Resolutions 1717, one which supports state rights for medical marijuana, and the other one that provides defense for medical marijuana users. And I was also going to thank State Representative Dutton, for introducing House Bill 715, which would have decriminalized the possession of marijuana in the state of Texas.
Well, you sound like a man who's on top of these bills, like we all should be. I mean, really, if we want to change these laws, I meet no one who doesn't want to change these laws. We need to do a little more, folks. Frank, I appreciate your thought, and I talked to the governor's aide. He should be joining us sometime in the middle of August. They'll be in recess then, and we'll for sure get him on the air.
Well, I had a question, because we spoke about this last night at the DPST meeting.
Yes.
I was going to address our city, Houston City Hall today, but my battery blew up, so I didn't have the opportunity. So I'm going to address them next Tuesday?
Well, I'll be there with you. We're going to go before the city council and blast them good for their lack of morals, their determination to hurt our children with this drug war.
Well, yes, sir. And my question is, basically, I have either one of two issues I want to present on this first time. One is the issue why the Houston City Council would continue its support of racist marijuana laws that are costing the American people billions and billions of dollars. And I have a flyer that I've showed you last night that exposes that truth. Or I was going to ask them for more than 3 minutes, because this is my second time I've had the pleasure of speaking in front of a government representative, so I can read my entire flyer instead of being forced to whittle it down to 3 minutes. What do you think I should do?
Well, Frank, that's probably more than we can discuss on the air. Do give me a call. My number... For any of you out there, you ever want to talk about drug war, if you want me to come give a talk to your organization, I've spoken to churches, to colleges, and to high schools. And drug reform is a positive, folks, and I'd like to share it with anyone out there who's willing. Well, Frank, we thank you for your call, sir.
Well, Dean, if you ever get an opportunity, can you please take a moment to read my entire flyer so we can reveal how racist the beginning of this marijuana war was one of these days? If you ever get the chance.
Okay, I have looked at it, Frank, and it's well done. I'll say that just up front. But again, that's something for off the air.
I'm trying to get the air so the actual people of Houston can understand. So if you ever get a chance to present the actual racist side, please do on the air. So more than just myself and you know about it.
I'll tell you what, Frank. I will put a link up to that particular document on my website.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
And this document on the air would be greatly appreciated, Dean.
You bet. You bet. And I appreciate your attitude and your efforts. Thank you, Frank.
Well, thank you.
All right. Folks, we got some more calls. I'll get to you in just a second. But I was saying you can contact me and you can call me on the phone, 713-922-HEMP. That's my phone number. Oh, I just got the word that the Hemchi vote failed in Congress, bill number 407, but they're now doing a roll call vote, and of course it's supported by our one-time guest, Ron Paul, but at least the votes are being tallied these days. They used to just do these on a voice vote and, yeah, move on. The Democrats are standing tall. The Democrats vote 11-1 in favor of change. Typically, the Republicans vote 36-0 in favor of no change. And that's what we've got now. But the Democrats are standing tall, folks, and we should praise them. Write your congressman and let them know that you support when they want to change drug reform. Okay, who's been online the longest here, Steve? Let's pick up line 6. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to know why it is that people, even so-called drug law reformers, always talk in terms of reducing penalties for, quote, small-time users, but that dealers should still be considered like murderers. Well, what is the deal? I mean, if you should be able to use drugs, why shouldn't the person who supplies them to you be able to supply them to you?
I couldn't agree more than what you said. The whole point is maybe I read some things sometimes that are written by other folks using those words. My idea of legalization is, weed is a weed. Forget about it,
We aren't.
Huh?
We're either free or we aren't.
Yes. And that's the whole point. It's like the Lawrence, ruling of 3-4 weeks ago. And they spoke about the right of Americans to have privacy in their own homes. And that's exactly what we're talking about.
One other quick one is, in a similar vein, is this notion about doing away with imprisonment. Well, look, if you still have the record, it doesn't matter. I mean, it does if you're going to prison, but we either should be free or not. And don't, this stuff about, not you, but this stuff about, well, we're going to reduce the penalties, or drug offenders should go to treatment and not to prison. They shouldn't be arrested.
You've touched on a very touchy subject for me, and that's the treatment provisions which we now have, which means it's basically a gentler but much bigger dustpan and a huge broom. And they're going to sweep people in through the system. They're going to give them the stigmatization. They're going to, gently drive them into the same hole.
But can't you see how corporate America could get behind that kind of scheme? And can't you see coming down the pike treatment centers for people who eat too much fast food instead of being sent to prison? They go to, they get diverted to a treatment program at taxpayer expense.
Oh, you're right, caller. My guest from 6 weeks ago, Jeff Solem, spoke of the fact that once we get rid of these drug laws, they'll probably be putting jaywalkers in prison because they need to have this mechanism to control the populace.
And the corporate welfare is so sweet.
Yeah. Well, sir, I thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome back.
All right, Steve, let's go to line, where are we at? 3. Hello, caller.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Oh, good. I wanted to start by thanking you personally for what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
I think it's great. I just recently discovered your show, and I'll never miss another one.
Well, you tell your friends. I thank you, though.
Oh, I definitely will. I've got two questions for you. One is that if something were to finally get passed, do you think it would be limited to life-terminating illnesses? I've got extremely chronic back pain, and the medication that I'm forced to take, I feel like I am anyway, because the company that I work for, drug screens and whatever have you, the stuff that I'm taking is far, far more addictive and bad on your body than marijuana would be. So my first question is, do you think that anything that would eventually get passed be restricted to life-terminating illnesses? And second, the caller just touched on before me, would there be any reversal of any charges that might, like a misdemeanor or a felony or whatever, if you had any charges before, would they go retro and remove those from your record?
Well, my opinion, and
we're
that's
just
really
guessing here, but
well,
yeah.
No, but it is my opinion. I'm not an attorney. But the point is, there was a situation in Alaska. They tried to go for legalization, and they also included a provision in their bill that said all prisoners should be released and compensated, and it blew it. They lost 39-61%. Though, had they not asked for those retroactive provisions, they I think would have won. And I guess it really boils down to is common sense that. When no one's going to jail for something, why are these people in jail? And they would be released. It would happen, but the whole point of it is that the incrementalism of drug reform kind of irritates me sometimes, that one group's going for this little niche and another for that niche, and we need to work together, because it's big, it's bold, it is a big rotted corpse sitting there 30 years dead. And we need to get rid of this thing. The people who defend this corpse have no idea how, other than to run. They hide. They refuse to come on this show. They have no ammunition. And, the day will come when many of you will join me in calling them evil.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It seems to me that being able to self-medicate is the main issue here. And I always hear it spoken within the context of cancer or, the life-terminating illnesses. And, it's for a person that is in my condition, I mean, I need them just to be able to sleep and be able to function on a daily basis. And, what about the people who aren't terminally ill but are in excruciating pain on a daily basis? It just seems like the focus is always on life-terminating illnesses.
It's such a shame. Caller, I thank you. I'm happy that you others are calling in out there, and we appreciate, your involvement.
Thank you.
All right. We're gonna take about 30 seconds and be right back.
People need to know what the patients are up against. We're up the pharmaceutical industry, which will definitely lose at least a third of its business the day that cannabis regains its rightful standing in our community as it did 100 years ago. And you're talking about the petroleum industry, which of course supplies all our products and does not want the farmer competing in the textile, construction, fuel, and paper industries. Yeah, so that's another one. But you have the alcohol and tobacco industries who really want us hooked on those drugs, and they are tremendous lobbyists who really support both parties.
That was Elvi Musica. She is one of the six surviving federally supplied medical marijuana patients. She's one of those people who the government has proven medical marijuana works for, and yet when it comes to, you know, any public environment or debate, they deny it to the hilt, even though the proof is there. Well, Steve, let's go ahead and looks like we got Butch on line four. Hello, Butch.
Hi.
Yes, do you have a question?
Yeah, well, this is to the medical community of America.
Right.
You know, I watch TV, and they're selling gas and cars and drugs.
Right.
Tons of drugs for everything you can think of every day. So there's a routine. There's so many doctors. They try so many things on so many patients over so long period of time. Bam, it's done. So as far as medical marijuana goes, that's been proven.
8,000 years ago.
There's enough doctors to pass any Prevacid test.
Well, it was in the Pharmakia, I'm sorry if I got that name wrong, but the book that stores all the medicines used, you know, for a given year, by and the doctors use it as a reference. And it was part of, it was American, printed in America until the mid-1950s. And it is a legitimate medicine, and the government lies. They lie every day.
Yeah, but why don't somebody just hold the numbers up side by side on TV for everybody in the world to see that Prozac and all this other stuff, anything for you can't get it up to, you can't go to sleep, to I'm depressed, to whatever, it's all in there. And if they just restricted it to the terminally ill and the chronic pain, all that to begin with, the rest will take care of itself, I would think.
Well, sure it would. Butch, the whole point is that, in my opinion, you know, and I've got several people that will agree with me, but it really boils down to the hemp plant. The hemp plant has 25,000 uses in America, industrial functions it can do. And many businesses would lose billions of dollars, and they give millions of dollars every year to our congressmen to keep these laws the same.
You know, there's things to be, you know, they can make rope again.
Well, sure, but the point is, those people don't have their money yet. Their company is not functioning, and they cannot bribe these public officials.
They can just block out a provenly given medicine by more doctors than it takes.
Yeah,
it's past whatever's on TV.
It's just not making much sense.
Yeah. Well, that's my question to the medical. Come out, people.
Oh yeah.
Tell them what's going on. Tell them we ain't going to take this anymore.
I hear you, Butch. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you, sir. All right, Steve. Who we got there? Randall, line one. Hello, Randall.
Hello. Glad to hear you again.
Well, yes.
Sorry you weren't able to get your guest, and I'm sorry you only have half an hour.
But
one of the other things we need to do in order to disembowel the corporations, which the mega corporations who are deeply involved in our government, practically running it,
yes,
are either either they're in the government or they're working for the corporations, and then they're back in again, each helping the other again and again. One way is to return to the 5-year limit. That is, what we originally had when this country originally came about was that the corporations were chartered, and every 5 years they would, you know, a group of Americans together in the government, I'm not quite sure, because it's so long ago and it hadn't been done in such a long time, they would look over the charter, look and see what the corporation have done, and if they decide that the corporation has not helped people, help civilization, they would be disbanded.
Well, certainly if they're stacking their money in offshore bank accounts, they should. I hear you.
Oh, yeah. Or those ridiculous moving their company offshore by paper. That's just ridiculous. I'd say, okay, 100% tax. See how long they do it.
Yeah.
That and selling off jobs, which is what they're doing too, killing us another way. And in the end, killing this country, because those kind of corporations are transnational or non-national. They're everywhere. Their sovereignty essentially is wherever they are. And I don't know how much longer it will be before they do get a kind of sovereignty like a country has. I mean, they already have sovereignty greater than a human being. They have superhuman listing. And I'll do some 1883 ruling that they now have been interpreting as meaning that, you know, they have the right to privacy, even though you or I have to fight for that.
Right.
From the Ninth Amendment, which curiously is something not taught in any legal schools ever since the Supreme Court's finding, as far as I know, they haven't ruled on the Ninth Amendment. They've just ignored it and barely recognized the Tenth. They've listed 1 through 8, then 10 occasionally. But,
right.
But that's where all our other rights reside. And it's not given by any God, because what can be given can be taken away, because we were born into it. Where do we get it from? I guess you could say from our parents. Where did we come from? From our parents. And if they had it, we have it. But still, it's something we have to fight for. And unfortunately, as the economy crumbles and people like myself and millions of others are unemployed and doing the best we can to find what little we can.
I'm right there with you. A year and a week today. Randall, we appreciate your call. I want to get to some of these other callers.
Right. And remember, first we have to win the propaganda war. Once we start that turning the tide, people will join.
You bet.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, we're going to take a little listen here.
Fool me once. Shame on you. It fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. To end the drug war, visit mapinc.org.
Yes, God planted the seeds and he made the herbs of the field, and God saw that it was good. Genesis chapter 1, verse 12. You know, you have to think about it for a minute that who are these guys that run this drug war? Who are they? You know, are they used car salesmen? Are they flim-flam guys? These guys are carrying. These guys are holding. These guys are holding a big bag of lies. And they're carrying it around on behalf of these charlatans and cretins from the early 19th century. And they don't, you know, they have nothing. They have nothing. They cannot defend themselves for 1 minute in a public debate. Think about that next time you vote, and please register to vote. Think about it. The mayoral elections, we might could find a better candidate, and I'm going to look for one that's willing to come on this show. Don't you think they should? Anyway, I think we've got one caller here, and I want to let you know that we have lines open. It's 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Okay, Steve, let's go to line two.
Hello, is this me again?
Hello, Frank. You're back. Hey, what's going on, bud?
I just want to make a comment on what a previous caller said.
All right.
He spoke of pharmaceutical companies. Well, have you seen the new ad for adult ADD? Pharmaceutical companies have gone so far that they have invented a disease to push a drug, Ritalin, that we are already pushing heavily upon our children. So we mentioned marijuana has been around for 8,000 years, and now, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, no one's ever heard of adult ADD, but you see it on primetime television. They're pushing adult ADD so they can invent a disease, promote a drug called Ritalin that we have been pushing on our children since, like, the late 80s, when this whole Just Say No Nancy Reagan campaign began. I just wanted to make that comment, Dean. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Frank. Okay, Steve, I think it's time to do the Carrot of the Week. Run track four, would you?
For their work as a grand deceptor, hypocrite, lying weasel, bigot, corporate whore, baby raper, superstitious shill, or ultra sinner, Cultural Baggage is proud to present the Coward of the Week.
Okay, I thought about this one long and hard. I had in mind a certain local judge and a U.S. representative elected from Houston. But I'm going to bide my time on these gentlemen for another week or two. Now, this week I choose for our Cowards of the Week, the U.S. Republican Guard, that are deathly afraid of losing political contributions from those corporations that would be impacted by the legalization of hemp. And so thus they pretend to be deathly afraid of marijuana, and who thus far have shown no compassion for America's sick and dying. So therefore, I choose the cowardly Republicans in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. Next week we're going to, and I'm fairly certain of this, we're going to have Ethan Nadelman. He's the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, probably the preeminent organization in America and perhaps in the world in regards to drug reform. And Steve, run that little piece from Ethan, if you would.
basically the idea is to change political consciousness in this country so that our children, hopefully our children and certainly our grandchildren, look back on the drug wars of the last few decades and of today with the same sort of distaste and contempt and even horror that we look back today on the Jim Crow laws and the slavery in our own nation's history.
Ethan Nadelman, Executive Director, Drug Policy Alliance, drugpolicy.org.
Ethan's a great guy. You're really going to love talking with him because this man has studied this for decades and has great people working for him to get to the bottom of this mess. We do have another caller there. I'm going to get to you in just a minute. We're about to run out of time, but I want to let you know that this show, Cultural Baggage, I mean, normally we have congressmen, Canadian senators, members of the European Parliament, authors, you know, notables within reform, if not within the nation. And all our shows are stored at cultural-baggage.com. And if you have some ideas on future guests that you'd like for me to bring on the show, you can contact me, dean@cultural-baggage.com. Steve, let's go ahead and pick up Randy on line one. Hello, Randy.
Hi there.
Hi, do you have a question or concern?
I just wanted to correct an error made by one of your previous callers. He was referring to adult ADHD as, or implying that it was phony and the pharmaceutical companies made it up to sell drugs. That's not true. Adult attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a very real disease. In fact, the main reason that I started smoking pot when I was a teenager was because of this hyperactivity disorder, and all the doctors kept saying, you'll grow out of it, you'll grow out of it. All boys grow out of it before they become adults. Adults don't have it. It's only within the last 10 years that any doctor has finally admitted that adults do have this attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. The only reason I'm not smoking marijuana now is because I can't afford it. In fact, I'm out here in the garage with my toolbox and a bunch of stuff, and I'm treating my hyperactivity by staying busy.
I'm no medical authority. I'll just say this. I don't trust the pharmaceutical houses as I can throw them. And I would have to do some investigation before I could comment.
And they certainly do over-prescribe Ritalin. They use it way more than they should. They use it... They give it to kids who are just energetic kids.
My kids were all diagnosed with it. I'm sure I had it because I recognized the same symptoms in myself.
Yeah, from the way you talk, it sounds to me like you might have.
Yeah. Well,
seriously.
Well, that's all right. Randy, we're running out of time. I got one more caller I want to get to, and okay. I appreciate your comment, and I'm going to look into that.
Just tell your friends, ADHD is a very real disease. It's only recently recognized to exist in adults.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, that's an opinion. I want to go to Ronnie. Line
Actually, it's
three.
A medical fact.
Right, line three there, Steve. Ronnie, a quick concern, Ronnie? Hello, Ronnie.
Yes. I was listening to the news this morning and was made aware of a new bill that's supposed to go into effect November the 1st, where all DOT hazmat truck drivers will have to undergo a background check.
Ronnie, I'm so sorry, man. We're running out of time. I will look into it. You're talking about drug tests, right?
No.
But Ronnie, I'm sorry, bud. We're gone. Steve, run the clothes, bud. Thank you for listening, folks.
For my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. KPFT, Houston.